welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they've got everything John Deere that you can possibly imagine right now. They're selling the electric John Deere mowers. Because, you know, in California, you can't run the gas mowers.
You feel like the electric mowers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're starting to sell. So I think people are kind of warming up a little bit. First, it's like, you're not going to force me to buy one. But they're buying them. So it is what it is, folks. So come up and see them.
The grass makes them do it.
Yeah. They've got a great inventory on hand, and they'll walk you through how they work and all that. And or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
So there you go.
Nice. So let's see. Today is April 14th, 2024, in case we re-air this. But our guest today is actually in studio. We're all here, which is kind of fun. So we will have no phone fun. Ben is here. Everybody's here. We'll have no phone drama. Although I think people do. Like I think they listen. It's kind of like why you watch car racing. You know, you sit in turn four because that's where the wrecks are. Yeah, things happen. Things just keep happening. Our guest is Stephanie Bridget. She is the district attorney here in Shasta County, and we thought there are a couple of reasons. Okay, for one, we see the district attorney on, like, every, maybe we just watch a lot of crime shows, but, like, every show, you know, well, the DA, such and such, you know. So we all feel like we kind of know, we know that there is this person, but I don't know that everybody knows what they really do and what type of omnipotent powers you have or not. So we thought that'd be worth having a conversation about. And part of this discussion today will also be about this Prop 47 initiative, repeal initiative that's going around. That's being run by the district attorneys in California. And Prop 47 basically made crime legal again. So that's why we've been on such a joyride. But we'll get into that today as well. So if you don't live in California, I guess you can ignore that part, except for the fact that we are a cautionary tale. So the people in your community might want to have a Safe Schools and Streets Act and make all the crimes misdemeanors, and maybe you could tell them how well that's worked out for us after you hear all this. So let's see. Stephanie is the first woman to serve as the Shasta County District Attorney since the office was established in 1851. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Huh. Wow. I didn't know. She has spent the majority of her professional career as a prosecutor in the Shasta County District Attorney's Office. Began there in 2002. And in March of 2017, she was sworn in as the 32nd District Attorney. It's all we've ever had in that length of time.
Yeah, I know.
God, we have some longevity. Just kind of doing some fast math. It's like, wow, that's not
some longevity and some repeat district attorneys over the years.
So you are term limited by the voters, which is correct. What term limits should be. They should happen at the ballot box.
Yep. Okay. Based on the ballot.
Good call. During her career, she's handled every type of criminal prosecution, from misdemeanor cases to homicides. She's committed to ensuring victims of crime have a voice, and their office fights to make sure justice is served, which, I mean, I would kind of hope this is the mission statement for everybody. I was skimming down. Maybe, how about this?
Sure.
Since you're here in Ohio. So why'd you decide to do that? I'm sure that's probably not in the bio. I'm not going to read for it.
Why I decided for this career path?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's not like I went throughout my childhood or college or law school thinking this is what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to, you know, do something, a professional career and have something that's interesting. When I got out of law school, I actually started with a civil firm in the Bay Area. And I only worked there for about maybe 9 to 10 months. I was doing, class action, civil defense on construction cases. I mean, talk about, it was so boring for me.
I was going to say, that's exciting stuff.
10,000 tons of paperwork and mostly just all research, and you're like, wait, I didn't want to become a contractor?
Right. I started thinking, why did I even become an attorney?
Yeah.
So then I got the position up here, and I came up here and just immediately fell in love with it. So it's really just a product of giving it a shot, thinking that this would be something interesting to go do. And then just like almost immediately, I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for my entire career. I just love it. I love being able to be in the courtroom. The cases are interesting. Everything about it is just a great profession.
So let's start from the back and go to the front.
Sure.
Okay, so what's the thing nobody knows about the district attorney's office? You're like, oh, if we could just spray it on them, you know, so they would all know. Like, what's the thing that really people don't know, or they think you can do and you can't? That's probably a pretty long list.
Oh, people think we can do a lot of things that we can't, especially in today's kind of culture and day and age, where I've explained it a couple times recently this way. A lot of people like to say that saying, oh, that's criminal. You know, if they get upset about something or, you know, something happens in their life, oh, that's awful. That's criminal. Well, people think like take that literally, that just like all of these woes that occur in our community are actually crimes. And they're not. So that has been probably the bigger hurdle year over year, as kind of we see so much political unrest and a lot of issues happening on the local, state, and national level, that, you know, certain things are criminal and some aren't. But a lot of things that people think should be criminal, they're really civil. They're not. It's not a crime. We deal with, you know, penal code, vehicle code, welfare and institution codes. There's some very specific elements that must be met for something to be criminal. And that is definitely something we see more and more and more, where people think things are criminal, but they're not.
And so the types of things you prosecute as the district attorney, what goes to your office? Because I know a lot of people bring things to your office. Like, here I have this online fraud, or I have this whatever, and they bring them all to your office. I'm sure you have like a public contact desk that has a stack of incoming.
So that's a pretty broad question. I could talk about what our office does, and then I think talking about the process of how a case comes from law enforcement to us is probably the best way to kind of explain that. So the office of the district attorney, there's 58 in the state, Shasta County being one of the 58. It is an elected constitutional position. We have jurisdiction over entire Shasta County and all crimes committed in Shasta County, whether it's in the city of Redding, city of Shasta Lake, or unincorporated areas, or Anderson. And we do have prosecutors, so attorneys that handle the cases. And we have our Bureau of Investigation, so sworn police officers who do primarily follow-up work on our cases. And we have a Crime Victims Assistance Center that works with victims. And I can get into each of those in more detail, but just to answer kind of the question you said, that's the general makeup of the office. We aren't what you would call, you don't call us if your car was broken into, or you don't call us, you know, you call RPD, you call
the police department,
you call those people who are going to go out and respond right then and handle your case. Typically, our investigators are doing follow-up work, preparing cases for trial. They're re-interviewing witnesses, interviewing new witnesses, going out taking pictures and measurements and crime scene diagrams and all of that type of stuff.
So you've got your own investigators that go out and basically do the same thing the police did the first time around.
Yeah, well, we try not to duplicate that, but we try to supplement it when it comes to us with additional things that we need. And that's where that process of how a case goes from law enforcement to us to trial, because when we've got, you know, Reading Police or Sheriff's Office or any number of agencies that send cases to our office, they work on a different standard. The law allows them to make an arrest, submit a case if they believe that by preponderance of the evidence that the crime is committed and this person committed it. Well, when it comes to us, we can't convict a person, certainly not in front of a jury or otherwise, without proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a much higher standard. I mean, it's the highest standard in the land. So a lot of times we're doing a lot of extra follow-up work that a prosecutor may want, like an extra person interviewed, extra pictures done, going out and talking to an expert, whatever it may be, to kind of help get all the evidence we need to go to trial. So our internally, our investigators are doing a lot of that type
of work. Now, are they typically from a law enforcement background, and they move into the DA investigative area? Okay.
Yes, we don't hire right out of the academy. They have to have usually 5 to 10 years of experience in patrol and detectives before they're going to be hired into a DA's office. A lot of times it's around that 10-year mark where we tend
to get. How many investigators do you have?
We've got 2 open positions right now. When those are filled, I believe we've got 14. Mm-hmm. However, only 3 positions are really doing general fund crime, so following up on, you know, homicides, rapes, those types of cases. Because to the other point that Aaron brought up about, like, people who do call us and what can we handle from the beginning, and you, I believe you had mentioned fraud, because fraud is an area where we actually do take cases from the beginning on through. We've got grants where we handle welfare fraud cases, auto fraud cases. We have a consumer protection unit. We've got several different units that are more akin or closer to the fraud and consumer protection, where we do take initial complaints and run and investigate those cases all the way up to and including prosecuting those cases.
So in those cases, there is no police report. You folks take it from the very beginning. You take the initial complaint and run with it from there?
Yeah, our investigators would generate an internal police report and handle the entire investigation internally, okay, and then submit it internally.
Yeah.
So
what kinds of things? Okay, so you don't do civil type stuff.
Well, we do. We have our consumer protection unit. So
hey, yeah, talk about that a little bit, because that's big right now.
Yeah, so our civil protection unit can handle so, for example, when we've had catastrophic wildfires and there's people that are contracting without license and they are trying to price gouge and raise their prices and go in and take advantage of people who maybe had their house burnt down or their fence burnt down, and they're running scams on the community, that is a consumer protection issue that we handle in our unit. Also cases, we are part of a statewide task force for consumer protection with other district attorney's offices. So we'll get complaints into our office. For example, let's just pick any big box store like Macy's, just came to my mind. Let's say that they are running an ad that a person gets 15% off if you buy this lipstick. But when consumers go and they buy it, it's only ringing up as 5% off. But most consumers don't recognize that, right? Because you just see, okay, well, the price went down
a little bit. There was a discount, yeah.
Right. Well, every once in a while, someone is going to notice. They're going to calculate that, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute. This isn't right. You're not giving what you advertised for. Well, that individual person isn't going to stand much of a chance bringing a lawsuit against Macy's.
Yeah, no.
So the statewide consumer protection units work together, and they keep track of all these complaints statewide. And once they start seeing a trend of complaints, we send investigators in to do, you know, shell buys to see if this is happening. And then we bring a case on behalf of the state of California against Macy's,
okay,
against that company.
Right.
And what we are doing is not only bringing to light very publicly, because they're being sued by the DA's office, consumer protection, to stop the behavior. Because first and foremost, that's what we need to do, is stop the behavior so people stop, you know, being scammed.
Getting ripped off, yeah.
That's the number one thing. And bringing that case brings it to light, gets them to stop. We get court-ordered injunctions that make them stop doing it. And then we usually hit them with a civil penalty as well. That civil penalty goes back to those DA offices that brought the case. just to fund those prosecutors' ability to keep bringing those cases. It doesn't go to like general fund or my office to use it for whatever we want. It has to fund an investigator and prosecutor to keep doing that work on behalf of the people of the state of California.
Yeah, well, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so our unit is very active. We've done a lot of really big cases, and you know, a lot of people don't know we have it.
So we want to hear. We definitely want to hear more about that. And yeah. I've got some, I do want some real examples because I've got a few that people have called and I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's a thing they do. And yeah. I told a few people over the last few weeks, I'm like, hey, we're talking to the district attorney. We're going to ask her all this.
Yeah. Yeah. On our website, you can fill out forms to send those complaints directly into our consumer protection unit and we review those.
I might accidentally do that for you.
Yeah.
we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Bet I can drive faster than you can. Come on, hoss, let's have some fun. Go on, shoot me with a radar gun. You look bored and I sure am. Catch me if you can. Hey, hey, Mr. Policeman. I got a 75 fiber Trans Am. With a 455 up under the hood. Me and my brother got a running good. Wake up behind them old Ray-Bans. Catch me if you can. Go on, turn on the blue lights. So pretty.
Think I'm crazy, cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there.
So it is a jungle out there. All right. So
great song.
When you are, when you're working on those kinds of things, like consumer protection type of stuff, what about? Well, go with the ones that are in real life. Like these are things where people would walk in, maybe type of advertising, or like what would be some other?
So product quality sometimes. Let's take, I believe we had something on, I don't know if that one's settled yet, so.
Oh, mum's the word on that
let
one.
Let me think of another one. Let me just think of kind of an example.
Like, does it have to be something where local consumers interacted with them in real life, like in physical life, or could it be they were email scammed or phone scammed?
Oh,
what about all that stuff?
Yeah, no, we definitely can help with that as well. So for example, we've helped with real estate law a lot where people, let's say you're buying a home and you're going to wire money. There's been a lot of scams out there. We'll try to interject and send you an email that looks like it's from your title company that's changing the wiring instructions. Uh-oh. So the money end up getting wired somewhere else. So part of our consumer protection unit does real estate as well. And we're constantly going out and talking to the Realtors Board, the Realtors Association, to inform them of any of these types of scams. Because a lot of times, if we know about it quick enough, it's not necessarily that we're going to be able to maybe find the offender, because a lot of times they're just not even in California.
Or the country.
But there is a certain amount of time where you can get that reversed if you have reported it and it looks like it's fraudulent. And we've been able to successfully do that several times to help people get their money back when they had sent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars off on these types of scams. So if you are or feel like you have been a victim of fraud on a real estate deal or anything, like reaching out to our office is as quick as you can be very beneficial.
So they don't report that to the police department first? They can go directly to your office? Or
For that, they can go directly to our office. But you can call both.
Okay.
Just to cover your bases, but we're the ones that are going to be working. We have a real estate fraud unit that can work on that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What's your most common thing when it comes to that kind of stuff?
Oh, most common. It really trends on what is the most common. It's just always changing.
Do you have a lot of it in, like, in person, ripping people off in person, or more of it, like, distance, phone, computer, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, most of the people are distant. Yeah. So let's say you see an advertisement on Craigslist for a house for sale or for rent, and you're going to go look at it, but the person's only dealing with you over the phone. Because a lot of times they'll take a legitimate house that's for sale, put it up for rent, and use those same pictures, but advertise on Craigslist and try to get your deposit ahead of time and say that you can move in a week, but then that house was actually listed by someone else for sale or for rent, and that's why it's empty. So there's so many different types of scams like that.
Does that happen often?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That'd be a bummer.
Can you imagine? You go to, you know, okay, great, you're all ready to move in, and then you, like, especially if you were coming from out of the area.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Yeah, because you're thinking, I'm just renting, like, I don't necessarily have to see it ahead of time. I saw the pictures, although I would never do that, but okay, yeah. I guess people could.
Well, when you're dealing with a tight housing market, which I'm sure they are, you know, you said your show is across the nation. I'm sure that's very common.
In all sorts of places.
Well,
you
the
look
nation.
At, especially if you got a job in another city, maybe another state, and so you're doing your kind of shopping. Okay, so what's the...
Doing it all online.
All online? Yeah. What's your... Yeah. What do you do? Go with a local property management company or a local realtor to like make sure that doesn't happen to you? Like, what's the protection of that?
Someone's got to go and see it in person.
Go with a human?
Yeah.
Oh. We have a cold brewing in here.
Yeah, I was about to sneeze.
We have
a tissue in here.
Yeah, go do that. We'll talk randomly about nothing. Oh, I hate
those
that.
Allergies time of year, you know?
I'm telling you ahead of time. Everybody heard me in the Marge Simpson voice, which I'm always really close to anyway. I'm always just one click above the Marge Simpson voice, but when I'm sick, it's like, rawr, you know, get the hardcore Marge Simpson voice. So, okay, here's one. I had a guy call me. Oh, my gosh, it's been 5 or 6 years ago. He would have been, I think he's 89 now, so he would have been like 84, 85.
Yeah.
And he was contacted by these people, and they told him that if he sent them, this wasn't gift cards, because I get those all the time, too. We should probably tap on that.
Yeah.
But if he sent them a certain amount of money, you know, $1,000, $2,000, something, they would be investing. He wanted to start a tuition-free Christian university.
Oh, yeah.
And, we want to do that, too. Oh, my gosh. That's what we want to do. Well, we'll work with you. You send us that. We'll get you the money.
Yep.
Well, he has sent them, just called me the other day, because I told him, I go, that's not a thing.
No.
Don't do that. That's a terrible idea. They're coming over. I go, I guarantee you they never show up. So when they don't show up and they have a really great excuse, that means they're lying. So here 5 years later, he calls me and he goes, well, I said, so whatever happened with that? They have given them over $300,000.
Yeah.
But the thing is...
It's horrible.
Can you... If they gave it to them...
No.
You can't. It's not a crime.
Well,
it's kind of like giving someone your car and then claiming they stole it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if a person is still... they're being misrepresenting and they're being fraudulent in what they're doing, their actions can still be fraudulent because they got that under false pretenses. But the problem is catching that person.
Yeah. These people, I'm sure, are nowhere to be found.
They're not in
I told him
California or Shasta
County. There's a giant building filled with Nigerian princes who email all of us all the time. Like, everyone knows. I mean, God, remember the era of the Nigerian prince emails?
Yeah.
Nigerian prince wants to share his wealth with you. It's like, no, he doesn't. He really doesn't.
Well, and things are getting worse, too, with artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Because we've all heard of those scams that we've talked about where someone calls grandma acting like the kid.
I'm your grandkid. I'm in jail or whatever.
I'm in jail, yeah. And they're talking really fast and really quick, and so they're trying to hope that grandma can't really tell that it's
like
a different
voice.
Like
super late at night or super early in the morning. All the ones I've heard of were always at really weird times when it would catch you.
Right. Well, right now, it's even worse because artificial intelligence can take a kid's online personality. So they're posting videos with themselves talking or whatever it may be, and they can clone their voice and everything and then use the kid's actual voice to call a grandparent, call a parent. And it's a lot easier for them to get away with those types of scams now because they can actually replicate a family member's voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By getting their online presence, and they'll know stuff about them. They'll know.
Well, people put a lot of information online. I know you were just in such and such on vacation. Yep. Blah blah blah.
Oh, I know you just got back from Hawaii, but I'm here and I need this and yeah.
Okay, so you got those, and you guys can look in. To that kind of? What do they have to have?
For those types?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those really goes down to, I mean, that's more education. You got to teach people to not fall for that.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to track all those down.
Yeah, those people are not sitting here in Shasta County.
Right.
Or California, and you're just not going to be able to do it. So
most of them are over. I mean, I'm like this one guy, the guy that I was talking to with the $300,000. I told him, I go, look, there's a giant building, and all the people on the first floor are getting $2 an hour, and their job is to just find out if you're a human. So they're just calling and calling and calling and calling and calling and checking the box. Is a human? That's not a human. Human? No human.
Yeah.
And I go, they have no skill set. As soon as they get a person, that goes to the next floor. That person has a little bit more training, a little more knowledge, and now they kind of pitch you. Well, the pitch either succeeds or fails. Same calling process. Goes to the next floor up. Those people are a little better. I go, you're on the top floor. You're dealing with one of the original scammers, and these guys have been stringing you on for 5 years, and they've gotten all of your money. Do you not see that this isn't real? And he could not see it. Could not see it because he couldn't let go of it.
Yeah.
No, they're going to help me. I'm going to. And then
just,
he went
just
through
one turn from the payoff.
Well, and he went through the. It's like gambling. Yep. It's a weird like addiction. Do you see that very often?
And the person doesn't want to believe that they're a victim.
Right.
That's true. There's that.
Like, oh no, it's going to be true. I'm not going to be. I don't want to be the victim. This is a real thing. I'm going to hold out.
Yeah. Well, he went through a little phase there where he was going to get all the evidence and be able to turn it over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is kind of an expensive evidence gathering program. Maybe you should have someone else do that.
Especially $300,000. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Unbelievable. They lost their home and
it's
everything.
Hard to walk away from that.
No, they lost everything they own. Gave it all to them.
Wow.
What about the gift card thing? I had somebody else, they got a big settlement from, what do you call it? Workers' comp, I guess it was. So they had a chunk of money.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's public record. Probably isn't, but it is, I suppose, if someone in that system is potentially involved with it. Hey, so-and-so just got this payoff. Let's contact them. And that was the gift card scam. Hmm. You know, you go to Walmart, get the gift card, call us with the number and scrape the back off.
Right.
I guess is where the little secret code is.
Where the code is, yeah.
Never done the gift card, but I guess you scrape the back off. And that went on. For $100,000.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and people will get gift cards, and they'll, let's say they get gift cards through benefits that they're getting, welfare benefits on gift cards, and they'll take them to stores, and stores will let them buy, like, something for $10, but the card is for $100, and then give them $50 cash on top of it, and the person working there takes the card and gets to benefit that extra $30 that was on the card. That's a thing that's happens too.
Because they can only give them back so much. I mean, otherwise you could buy a $1 thing and get $99 back.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it just stay on the gift card?
Well, they give it. That's what they're doing. So then the person who works there can get the benefit of the $30 extra when they buy more stuff in the store. So it's really a scam of the person working there.
Oh.
There's all kinds of things.
You guys deal with those too, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like an easy one.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I got a publisher's clearinghouse call the other day. They're still out there.
Telling you won?
Uh-huh.
That's still around. That's been.
Except you forgot to enter. Well, this stuff used to be.
I believe it when they show up with the balloons on my porch.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're on the commercial.
Yeah.
Well, that used to always be in the mail. The mail was the physical mail. They would send you these things. Then it kind of moved to email, phone has always been a thing.
Yeah.
But
texting, social media, messenger apps, all of that. You're getting it on everything.
It's coming from every angle now. So,
and it's going after teens in a big way now, too. Because all the teens have their cell phones.
Sure. Is the level of data that people are sharing, I mean, okay, this is my, you know, my opinion on it is the more you share, the more vulnerable you are.
Oh, for sure.
Does that pan out?
Oh, for sure. And that's a big thing with our younger generation that all have cell phones and all have messenger apps and all have texting. They're starting to get the same text messages, the same fraudulent activity coming into them that they didn't used to get when they didn't have cell phones and when social media and all the online scams weren't such a big deal. Now they are. So they're targeting, they might be getting a lower dollar amount from a teen, but if they can get it from, 100 teens, that's going to be quite profitable.
Sure, it's a volume business.
Yeah.
They're not looking for one big score, right? They're mm-hmm. they're looking to hit everybody.
Yeah, stuff like very popular video games, they'll target that with, hey, enter this contest. It's only going to cost you $10, but you're going to get, the best avatar that you need to play on that game. They'll do it. They'll send in that money. But then they're not going to get anything back. I mean, right. That hits the teens, the online, all the time. Mm. I mean, it's very prevalent. Or with financial aid, like fake financial aid companies trying to.
Well, they had a whole big. Didn't they have a thing about that recently?
Yeah, especially this time of year with the loans. It's like if you pay this $80 application fee, you're for sure going to get this amount of scholarship, and the scholarship is going to range from anywhere to $2,000 to $10,000, but all you have to pay is the $80 fee to get entered into it, and then they'll teens or even, the parents will apply for that.
Right.
And then, oh, congratulations, you got it. Now we just need your processing fee of $30 and give us your account to transfer it to. And then, they're picking away at the amount of money.
A little bit more.
And just people just need to know. The biggest thing is if someone's reaching out to you, it's most likely not legitimate.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
Oh,
and if
okay.
it's legitimate, you should be able to not click on that link or not make that phone call. You should be able to get off of that, go do your own independent research for that company name.
Yeah.
And then call them through a back door area and say, hey, is this legitimate? Oh, yes, it is. And talk to them for real. Don't click on the link. Even if it says it looks like it's from your bank saying you were, mm-hmm. it looks like you were fraud
this
amount of money.
You need to change your password.
Yeah,
right?
Whatever it may be. Don't fall for that and click on that link or call that phone number that they list in there. You go get your own phone number for your bank, call your bank yourself and say, hey, I just got this text. Did you guys send it? Here's what it is. And I had one of those sent to me a couple months ago,
mm-hmm.
called my bank instead. And they're, nope, that's not, we never sent that. That's not accurate.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest way that people can keep themselves safe is to not click on, open, fall for that stuff. Do your own independent research.
And if it's asking for sensitive information, that's the red flag moment, the big red flag moment, like the password thing. Like whenever they send me a password, your password has to be changed.
Yeah.
Like I'll go back to whatever it is, website, and then click on that, log in, and change my password from there.
Yeah.
Rather than use their link.
Yeah, they call those phishing emails. They go in and they try to get information
with a PH,
from you.
Like with Price Pfister.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
I learned about that with the faucets. All right, we have to take a really quick break. Then we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Could be dumb dead, sleeping in an alley, didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley. Well, it could have been 1993 when it goes badly.
left it burning so bright. Trying to make sense of a hopeless situation, feels like dying in the middle of the night. When it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness. Nothing's ever, ever make it right.
That, by the way, is the sheriff on Yellowstone singing that song.
That's right.
Oddly enough. Okay, so you have an example of a real one that's like rolling through right now.
Yeah, so we recently had a local youth who was scammed out of about $20,000 on a Bitcoin ATM type scam. So Bitcoin, obviously, cryptocurrency, I'd say probably most people are probably aware of at least what Bitcoin is nowadays. But what it is that a person who's a scammer, a fraudster, they are impersonating a government agent or law enforcement, and they'll call you on the phone and notify you that that a scammer has access to your bank account, and that they have all of your personal information, that you're one of the identified victims, and that the scammers are in the process of emptying bank accounts of all the people on this list that they have identified, and that they need to move all of their money right now, and that the government has a secured cryptocurrency wallet that they can transfer that to.
Oh.
We'll send you the QR code for that, and you just need to transfer it all into Bitcoin on this QR code. We're going to hold it in the secure wallet while we finish this case, and then we can transfer it back to you. And they call. They're very convincing. They're putting themselves out there as law enforcement, part of the government, and people are falling for it.
Do you call them is there a phone number to call, or is this all online?
They're calling on the phone. And then they're asking them to, hey, we need to send you this QR code to your phone, you know, because it's typically calling your cell phone.
Yeah.
And then you can do all of it right there. You just scan that, transfer your money into that, and we'll hold it in this government secure wallet, and it'll come back to you after you're able to open up a new account so that they can't have access to it.
Mm.
We just had someone recently that happened to, unfortunately.
Wow.
So that call's coming around. You get that call. It's not real. It's a fake call.
Right, right.
And so on that one, who are they calling from? The FBI, FPPC office,
yeah,
or some other made-up thing?
Yeah. It's a big variety of them. Any type of law enforcement or government official.
They just string the acronyms together and go, yep, it's real.
Yep. Yep.
Yep, that's who we are. And of course you can't call them because most of those agencies you can't reach.
Yep.
And like if it's a fake one like that, they don't have a phone number because they're not real.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's another one to be aware of. But it just kind of, it really goes back to,
if they brought that to you guys, okay, let's say they didn't do anything with it, right? And so someone got that call and went, I don't know if this is real or not. Can you find out if it's real for them? Is that something you guys would do?
We can definitely research that, the number it's coming from, and have ways to find out. Yes, that's been reported already as a fraudulent phone number that's coming from. So definitely report those.
Okay.
Report any of that type of stuff. So
I used to watch a lot of scammer content, like people who would go after the scammers.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, if you're getting a call like that, if you just go to your bank and they start getting scared or telling you not to say exactly who they are to the bank, then you know they're fake. But definitely, if you're ever going to do anything with a caller on the phone, go to the bank and ask your banker, because the bank's not going to go along with it if it's fake. And if they do, then you have somebody to pounce on if they mislead you as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had somebody who the scammers reached out to them on their computer, so a big thing came up and said it was a thing, and then the phone rang, and they said, we're the people who sent you that because you have scammers trying to steal your money out of our retirement account. But then partway through that call, there were these calls coming in. She's like, somebody keeps trying to call me. I have to go. No, that's the scammers. They're trying to get to you. The scammers are trying to get you. And this was, she was getting called by some people who watch the scammers, who follow them, and they were trying to warn her.
Yeah.
So they called the police department in her town, and the police came and knocked on her door, and they said, leave your phone inside. Come outside. And, I mean, it takes a lot to shut these guys down. They're really good.
Yeah.
They get pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, a lot of the time, if you just go to your bank and first ask them, without, because what they try to do is they actually want you to go to the bank sometimes to pull money out.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're, they'll tell you when they're that specific to not mention that they're on the phone, and they'll say, "Get, you're getting this for your grandkids," right? If you just go to the bank and tell them exactly what it is, then you'll know if it's real or not.
Yeah, and the cryptocurrency one, they'd probably have to like bring that to you, right? Because where are they going to go for that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any of these types of scams definitely report to us. Because, like I said, it's going to be hard to catch the person. Not impossible. There have been fraudsters that we've caught over the years. But vast majority of the time is when we get these, we're going to put out like a PSA on our social media letting people know, hey, people are starting,
this is going around.
People are starting to get this call. Don't fall for it. We're also out. We go and we talk to, you know, any number of local agencies. So if you have a group out there, whether it's from a Rotary, a church group, a school, whatever it may be, that you want some training on this type of fraud or a variety of topics, we go out and we do that. We try to educate the community about what's going on in the community. We go into schools and talk about like cyberbullying, human trafficking, a lot of that type of stuff. We go to, you know, senior citizens' homes, real estate board, rotaries, all of those talking about different types of frauds that are out there. Because a big part is that we need to stop people from being a victim in the first place. Whether it's this online fraud type stuff or even here in our own community being a victim, we can't always catch everybody in our own community. And the laws of California have been watered down significantly over the last 15 years. So I really believe and have made it a point through the office to do a lot of proactive education to help people not become a victim in the first place. Because that's
yeah, sure,
ultimately what we want. If you're not a victim, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Solves all the problems. So tell me this. So if you are a person out there who falls for whatever this is, you know, the I'll help you build your lifelong dream of a university or whatever, and you continue to give them money, let's say you find out who they are, and they're never going to deliver, but this person gave them the money without being, I mean, they didn't tell them they were going to come burn their house down, or they had, you know, they had their dog at knife point. Can you still prosecute them for that?
I mean, I see the point that you're making.
Because they gave it to them.
It's hard. I can only say that it's always going to be hard for me to answer that question.
Yeah, it's got to be all the stuff.
Yeah. You would really have to have like kind of all the facts and how it all fell out, because most of the time in people who are victim of fraud, they are willingly giving their money, but they're doing it because of false pretenses.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, at what point does it go from, okay, they knew and maybe they're just, you know, it's civil and they got to just go after their money that way. That is so dependent on the facts of every single case.
Okay.
I couldn't really answer that.
No, that is the answer though.
Yeah.
The answer is it is the detail that matters. Yeah. But the idea, I mean, anymore with the sophistication of all this, the idea that as consumers, we're going to gather enough information to be able to go after them, we're not going to have that. Like, they're not going to slip up and give us...
Yeah, they're not going to tell us where they're at.
Yeah, they're not. That's not happening. No. So continuing to play the game so that you can get the evidence on them for the first amount of money they ripped off from you, we'll just give them a little more so we can catch them.
Yeah,
bad plan, right?
No, that's not a good plan.
Yeah, okay.
I do not advise that plan.
Okay, good. I've not advised that plan
before.
That's
an expensive plan.
I was like, yeah, that's going to cost you. I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Uh-huh. So, and then you were saying you wanted to move into whatever it was that I already forgot because it was 5 minutes ago. You're the person who's sick, and I can't remember anything. What the hell? Can I say hell?
Well, I guess one of the things we had talked about is wanting to talk about kind of how the law has changed in California.
And
we're really seeing that. So the way California goes, we see that start happening in other states too. So people can really learn.
They start drinking our Kool-Aid and then pretty soon.
Yeah, they can learn from California's mistakes on what to not vote for and what to not support in other states, to just kind of tie your viewership in to the national level. Because California, you know, I started in this back in 2002, and is a very different landscape than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I started in misdemeanors. I was there for a couple of years, and then I went up to felonies. And once you get into felonies, the options were really, if a person committed a crime, a felony, and they were convicted, they could get probation. They could get a couple, some amount of time under a year local jail and with probation, because probation usually came with some type of a local jail sentence, or they go to state prison. Those were the options. And it was a pretty simple system. There's lots of enhancements and lots of things that we dealt with. But it was a pretty simple, straightforward system. We could easily advise victims of crimes. There was a lot of understanding and truth in sentencing for victims of crime. And things have really changed since then. If you compare the way things are now to back then, it's almost like turned it on its head on everything that's happened. And it really just started back in 2011 with what was a legislation. So this wasn't a proposition. It wasn't voted on by people, but certainly voted on by people we voted into office. And that was AB 109. And what AB 109 did is it took over 500 classes of crime, of felony crimes, and said, okay, we're going to go away from that simple system of a person can get probation or go to prison. We're going to say, okay, now there's this third area, and these 500 plus crimes can never go to state prison.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Doesn't matter how many times they offend. And that would be the classic example I like to talk about is car theft, vehicle theft.
Ugh.
So a person could come and steal your car and your car, and my car, his car, and 10 other people's car over 30 days, and they could have a record of stealing cars. And their total exposure from all of these crimes that they've committed could be 30, 40 years. But after AB 109, they're going to spend that time in our local jail.
Oh, they still get time, but it's done locally.
It's done locally.
I wonder why it's full.
So that's it. That's exactly it. We start saying, well, the revolving door at the jail, why don't they keep anybody? Well, because our jails that were built as short-term custodial institutions to hold people on, a year or less or pending trial are now becoming pseudo state prisons. They are have people in them who are serving long sentences. There was someone, I think it was around a 12 or 15 year sentence. I was talking to the sheriff the other day that they have serving in there, and they have people serving 7 year sentences or 20 year sentences. And they're just taking up our seats.
But isn't the local jail supposed to be, was it ever a time frame, or was it the caliber of the crime? What kept you in local jail versus?
So local jail would be, so misdemeanors can only serve their time in local jail, and that's 1 year or less. And then local jail was also where anyone would be while they're pending their trial.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so if it was a felony, once they were sentenced, they could go to state prison. They wouldn't get a 10-year sentence and do it in local jail. That was just not the way our jails were ever designed. That's not the way the system was designed. But AB 109 changed that. And they changed that because of all the lawsuits of the prisons overcrowding, and
right,
we've got to empty the prisons, and let's do this. Let's just take away all these crimes and say they can never go to state prison. So now we see these people who are these repeat offenders out there that are just victimizing our community, stealing their cars, doing all these types of crimes. And they're not the ones that are, raping people or shooting people, because they can. Those classes of crime can still go to state prison. But the more everyday felonies, like the car theft, that is really hurting our citizens on a large scale, those are, it's a revolving door. Those people don't spend a fraction of time in jail that they should have because of AB 109. It's frustrating because the way to solve that problem of prison overcrowding was not to just let a bunch of people go.
Right.
I mean, it's since humanity has existed, there's been criminals, and there's had to be ways to deal with criminals, and you have to have some type of a system in place. And as your population grows, it's doesn't make any sense to think that you can keep the same amount of penal institutions and just keep cramming more people into those because you don't want to build another prison. I mean, once you're
And then you want to close them.
Yeah, your population keeps growing. You needed to build another prison, and you know, not everybody deserves to be in prison, and there's ways that stuff can be reformed around that. But the answer is not to just release everybody, because now our communities are suffering.
Now we've got them all back on the street, and we have to go through the whole process again.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and property crime kind of just makes people a little bit on the crazy side. We have to take a quick break here for the news and you know, some other stuff. Stuff, private stuff, secret stuff we're going to do. Yeah, we got a lot of secret stuff. And then we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this second hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, right between Oasis Road and Pine Grove exits.
Near the pencils, but not the erasers.
There you go. And you can go up and see them and check out all the new John Deere products. They've got a great inventory right now. They'll be glad to show you around, show you what they have. They've also got a great selection of all the electric mowers and handheld products. They're also a Ego electric products dealer. They have a full line of the residential and commercial Ego products to show you. And go up and see them, or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And hot tip, if you still haven't had your mower blade sharpened or your mower serviced and your grass is growing up over your house, it ain't happening anytime soon.
Yeah,
it's going to take a couple weeks. And if you call them every day, it's going to take longer.
Yeah, they're a little backed up right now.
I might have just remembered that
from
the days we used to work together. The people who called every day, well, their stuff's...
Yeah, get in there and get in line.
Took longer.
And they'll get you taken care of.
Do it as fast as they can.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a ticket.
Yeah.
Funny.
So it's kind of like your thing. Yeah, call every day. How's my case? How's my case? How's my case? I'm sure you have those people.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Whoop, it got set back.
Whoops, it's taking longer.
Parts are on back order.
So your version of parts are on back order. What does that sound like in the district attorney's office?
Oh.
We have Stephanie Bridget here talking to us from the district attorney's office. By the way, we keep forgetting to say who you are. She's having a little cold. Still Stephanie Bridget. All right, Stephanie, what's the... we were going through the list of bad choices that we have made here in California that are probably currently being floated in other states.
Yeah, so the next bad thing we decided in that, you know, is us the people voted for this.
Yeah.
2014 was Prop 47, and that is probably one of the biggest mistakes that the state of California ever enacted, because it's really caused, and there's like a direct correlation from national data and research that's occurred that shows the increase in homelessness, drug addiction, and theft has just skyrocketed in the state of California from 2014 up until now.
Was this the Safe Schools and Streets?
This is the Safe Schools and Streets Act. So it had absolutely nothing to do with Safe Schools and Streets.
Well, it did. We weren't going to get either.
Well, snappy name got it.
It was like no Safe Schools and no Safe Streets.
Right, right. So what it did is it if you boil it down into its simplest form into two areas is first, prior to Prop 47, the law was different. Let's say if a person had two prior convictions for a theft-related crime, the third one would be a felony. You get your two shots at the apple at a misdemeanor crime, you don't, you know, you don't learn your lesson, you keep stealing, okay, you're in felony. You're in felony. We can get some real sentences and hold you accountable. Prop 47 took that away, took away that prior ability. So you can go out there and you can steal every day for an entire year, and every single one of those crimes is misdemeanor, 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 misdemeanor. They also increased the dollar amount from $400 up to $950.
Yeah,
so,
that one really hurt.
Yeah, so not only to make it a felony, it would have to be over $950. So it's under $950 every day for an entire year, and it's still a misdemeanor. And it's just
what a stupid idea.
Ridiculous. Because I think we talked about this during the break, that a lot of people who commit crimes, criminals, are actually pretty intelligent people. Mm-hmm. And if they applied that for good, they could do a lot of good
Imagine
in the society.
That.
So yeah. When the law changes, the criminals know. They tell each other. They talk. They know what the law is. And we have had cases where people, they go into Walmart and they have a calculator. They have a pad of paper. They are keeping track of everything that
they're
putting in their cart.
In the beauty supply store. I walked in right after they had left. And the girl was freaking out. She said, one of them had a calculator. The other three ran around the building shouting out the prices.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't even subtle. It was just shouting out the prices. And the person was running the calculator and said, stop. And they all snatched up their stuff and ran out the door.
Yep. Because if they stay under that $950 and if they all do it together like that, it's still a misdemeanor. Prop 47 just gutted our ability to hold people responsible for theft crimes, and our businesses are getting crushed because of it.
I mean, just out of curiosity, do you know what I've never gone back and looked. Did it pass by a wide margin? I mean, was this
I'm sure it did.
I know. I should go back and look.
Yeah.
But people,
I'd be surprised if it didn't.
Me too, I guess. People kind of fell for that. I mean, they like to blame.
The other half of that is people need to stop buying stolen property because they take that stuff right out on the street and say, hey, look, I got $100 worth of product here. I'll give you for $20. Well,
where do you think that came from?
Yeah. It's stolen.
So that, you know, we've seen so many companies moving out of California. We rightfully see businesses here in our own community that are just frustrated again and again. You know, why isn't law enforcement doing anything? My business keeps getting, people keep stealing. Why isn't the DA's office doing anything? I mean, I just want to assure the community that the law enforcement, they are still taking the reports. They are investigating those cases. They're sending them to my office. We're reviewing them. We're filing them. And then they stop right there because it's a misdemeanor and they never show up. There's no room in the jail. Thank you, AB 109, to keep these people in there. And especially when it's a misdemeanor, it's the lowest category of what's going to be kept in custody. So they're all kicked out.
So it doesn't matter how many times they get popped for stealing $400 of the product.
Yeah.
It's still a misdemeanor they're never going to do time.
Yep. Because they're never going to show up. Our failure to appear rate is well over 60% of people showing up for their cases in court. So here we are, you know, our officers are doing all their work. The DA's office is doing all their work. And then come the court date, we're there, we're ready, and they don't show up.
Now, does that add any more to the sentence or the ability to it? It's another misdemeanor.
Bill, okay. you're gonna get another broken cookie.
Yeah.
Failure to appear on a misdemeanor's failure to appear charge.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's so much time and energy of us processing it. Filing.
You have to do it like it's real. You can't just assume they're not gonna show up.
It's just it's a ton of work that Prop 47.
Cost taxpayers money.
I heard you in a debate actually during the election, and somebody was alleging that if they got elected, they were going to turn those misdemeanors into felonies.
Yeah,
that's not a thing, right?
That's not a thing.
Yeah, okay.
You can't just decide.
Yeah, it's not
I would have
up
decided
to
that a long time ago.
I was like, wait, that's not a thing. Yeah, okay.
That's not a thing.
So that's not you don't get to make the law because you know, we figured it out a long time ago. The people who make the law shouldn't carry out the law, and vice versa.
Exactly. I'm not that part of the branch of government.
Right. So you guys don't have some latitude, that we'll get to here in a little bit, but not that kind of latitude.
We don't get to just make the law and then enforce it.
And if you think it's a terrible law, you still have to do it anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's part of it.
I mean, it seems like we shouldn't have to say that, but...
Yeah. That's a part of it being a...
But we've all seen it on Facebook, right?
The constitutional position is that you follow the Constitution, you follow the laws.
And people aren't concerned about it until it happens to them, and then all of a sudden it's a big deal.
Well, they want to blame the people who are carrying it out.
Right.
And in reality, that was done by the voters.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
That was done by the voters. Nobody did that to them. That was a group effort.
They did that together. Mm-hmm. The state of California did that. So the second part of Prop 47 is that it took drug possession and made that so that was always a misdemeanor. So in
drug possession was?
Yeah. So you walk down the street and they find you and you've got, 3 ounces of methamphetamine in your pocket. That used to be a felony. They get arrested, get the drugs confiscated, taken to the jail. You're held in custody at least through to your arraignment, if not longer, because it was a felony. And you go through the process. Now, that doesn't matter. It's going to be a misdemeanor. You've got cocaine, you've got methamphetamine, whatever it is that you've got possession
of. Can you have lots of all of it?
Yes. So the only exception to make it a felony is if we can prove you're possessing it to sell, if you're selling it. That's a very big hurdle. So you could be walking down the park, and have a pound of something in your purse, and it could still be a misdemeanor.
As long as it's not all bagged up in little bitty portions.
So if it's
that
bagged
up. That might
just
be for, easier access.
And you've got a lot of cash, and you've got,
A price tag on it.
Yeah, you've got, a record of showing who you're going to deliver it to. You have to have
scales.
A lot of that other stuff.
Right.
Scales, different things. But again, criminals are smart.
Oh, they know.
They're not going to carry that stuff. This person's going to carry the drugs. This person's going to carry that. So many cases are just misdemeanors now. Just these people, it's unheard of that you're walking down the street and you've got all these drugs in your pockets and you're basically getting a ticket there on the scene because it takes so much work and effort to even take you to the jail.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just going to be immediately kicked out, we're going to file the case and you're never going to show up. And they're hitting person after person after person. So,
especially when they hit the same person over and over, which I'm sure is a thing.
Yeah. So before Prop 47, when there were felonies, it was great because we could file it as a felony, and then we would really work with them under another proposition, which was Proposition 36, to get them into some type of a treatment program. Often it'd be a 1 year or 6 months or 18 month residential treatment program. And they'd go through that program. They'd have this felony that's forcing them to go. They've been in custody long enough that they've sobered up. Their family's there supporting them. And then when they get out of that and they come back, the agreement would be, okay, we're going to either reduce it to a misdemeanor or completely dismiss it because the person is now clean. They're sober.
Right.
They had this hanging over their head. We had such a robust system in place with that we were doing here locally. Prop 47 passed, completely gone.
Yeah.
Completely gone. So now we just have all these people who are drug addicted. They don't ever show up for court. They can't be held in jail. We can't put them into programs. And it's just cycling. Now they're stealing more to
feed their drug habit.
And that's not even a felony.
Not a felony.
So,
my God.
So here we've got a skyrocketing of theft and drug addiction. And all of these people that we are seeing in our communities and on our streets, it is a direct reflection from Prop 47.
Mm-hmm.
So the district attorneys in California, I'm sure not the guy in LA, but
Gascon is not joining our
probably
effort.
Not doing it. But even the kooky lady in San Francisco is a fan of getting rid of it.
We've got a new district attorney in San Francisco, and I've met her. She's
less kooky than
previous. She's got her act together than some
of
the previous ones.
Something about
ones.
That.
Yeah.
They're kind of tired of the revolving door, and they're going to try to make a change.
So the DA's decided, okay, that's it. We're gonna spearhead this effort to repeal Prop 47.
Yeah. So there is. It's called the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. That is what we named it several months ago as we've started this effort to, because that is what Prop 47 has really caused, the homelessness, drug addiction, and theft skyrocketed because of Prop 47. Now, It was submitted back in the fall for title and summary to get, but
then the wheels came off.
No, we actually got a pretty good title and summary.
Really?
So, yeah, the title that you will see when it's on your ballot, because and I'll explain more about that, and that'll be in November. The title is "Allows Felony Charges and Increases Sentences for Certain Drug and Theft Crimes." That's not bad.
Mm-hmm. That's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
It's not Safe Schools and Streets.
No, but right? It's not terrible. If they really wanted to tank it, it could have been a really bad one. But I'll just read it real quick, and then you'll see it. It says, "Allows felony charges for possession of certain drugs, including fentanyl, and for thefts under 950 for a defendant with two prior drug or two prior theft convictions as applicable." And it goes on and on. So it really does actually talk about it. But so a lot of the elected district attorneys throughout the state have gotten together to work on putting this initiative together, and also with other people who are not elected DAs who are working on this initiative. There's a big group that's working on it. Wrote the changes. We've done a lot of canvassing and polling up and down the state. If it gets on the ballot, 70% of the people that have been polled said they will definitely vote yes, and that's across the board, Republican, Independent, Democrat. So where we are right now is that we're in the signature collection process, which is ending right now because they're all in. We're verifying signatures because they have
to
be turned
in. You had to have, like, what, 550,000 ballot
or
something?
Right around 550,000. Our effort was to collect close to 900,000, which we got. I don't know what the final number was because it's still being tallied, but very close to that to make sure.
And it's like collected. When's your turn-in date?
April 26th.
So if you're out there and you've got one of those petitions and you've been gathering signatures, you got to get it in.
Yes, it needs to get in.
Can they bring them to your office?
No, they're collecting them in Sacramento at this point. I can't.
Okay.
I couldn't collect those at my office. But basically what it's done is that it is changing the two things that we just talked about. It's going to go back to the theft priors. So if a person has two priors, then the next time it can be a felony. We're going back to that system.
Oh, good.
And the next thing that it changes with thefts is kind of an example you gave earlier of three people going in together and working together. Well, we've seen that a lot in San Francisco and L.A., those smashing
those mobs,
grabs.
Oh, yeah. You get that.
Yeah, because all of those were misdemeanors because each person would take just, a little bit each. Well, this change in the law says no. If you're doing it what they call in concert with another person together, then that can be charged as a felony, even if it's your first time.
Nice.
And
if you were thinking about joining the smash and grab ring,
right?
You should probably
maybe think twice.
You should just stay in school because your joyride is coming to an end.
Exactly.
We have to take a really quick break, and then we will be right back. This part of it goes very fast, but the Prop 47 thing is a big deal. So if you live in California and have not signed on that, you better find somebody who's got one of the petitions and get that done. I will also post the address where those need to be returned in Sacramento. I'll put them on the webpage for today. It is April 14th, 2024. You're listening to We the People, and you can find that address at wethepeopleradio.us.
If we catch a criminal, when we catch a criminal, there's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers. Cops and robbers.
You're gonna go to jail finally. Yay. After this passes.
After this passes,
that song is gonna become much more popular.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us some of the other statistics. Just in case you're thinking, oh, that's great, you're going to get it on the ballot and it's not going to go anywhere. And then you're going to do like you did when we recalled Governor Newsom. If I got it on the ballot and then you didn't go vote.
Yeah.
All right, you better go vote on this one.
People have got to get out there and
vote. For heaven's sakes.
Just in general.
Yes.
People need to vote.
Yes.
So. Okay, so in the statewide polling, the data showed that 89% of the voters support changes to Prop 47 to allow stronger penalties. 90% of the voters polled overwhelmingly support the addition of fentanyl to existing laws, which we haven't talked about that yet. That's on the drug piece. So yeah, all of the polling data.
I mean, that's insane. Nothing polls like that.
Yeah, that's.
And that's not just like registered Republicans who all used to be policemen.
No,
I mean, this is like everybody.
This is everybody. This is Republicans, independents, everything. And it's interesting because the polling company that was used to do this, they do statewide polls, and they came back. They're like, we've never had something polled.
Like something weird
this
is happening.
Good. Everyone's ready for it. I mean, it's hitting everybody. Seeing these companies and people leaving the state, and what we're seeing so much locally. I mean, the amount of homelessness and crime.
I just met a neighbor. Yeah. Just moved to my neighborhood. She had 2.5 acres near the river, off of Cypress Avenue, and she said, "It's just I can't walk away for 5 seconds. They've kicked the back door in, and nothing happens because it's not a crime, anymore.
Yeah, it's. I think everybody is. It's the perfect time for this to come.
Yep.
It appears we're going to have signatures to get it on the ballot. Then it'll be on the November election, and people just need to look for that. I know I'm going to keep talking a lot about it.
Will it have a new number? Because we talk about it all the time as the Prop 47.
It'll get a number once it has enough signatures and is on the ballot. That's when it'll get its actual proposition number. So that point, we'll let everybody know.
We'll promote the heck out of that because that's super important.
Yeah, we'll promote that and its actual title and everything so people know what they're looking for and they know what they're looking for. But, you know, that's the three things it hits: homelessness, drug addiction, and theft.
Nice.
So like we were talking about on the drug piece, the other thing about, turning all the drug possession to a misdemeanor, that problems that we've already discussed, this proposition is going to change that because it's going to do kind of like with the thefts. It's going to say, okay, you can get caught twice for possession, but on the third time, it's going to be what we call a treatment-mandated felony. We can file it as a felony, but treatment is mandated.
And so, is there a time period involved in those three? I mean, is it within a year or within...
That's a good question. I don't think there was a time frame put into that.
So you get caught three times, you're signing up.
You're doomed.
And they get a treatment-mandated felony. So that means... not only drug counseling or whatever they may need, mental health, housing, it's written in there that is going to be an entire amount of services that is given to that person. Now, they could say, I don't want it, and then it just becomes the felony, but it's the third time is a felony, and we can go back into some of the other options we had before.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth time, it can go to state prison at that point. So it gives us a lot of layers in there. Another thing that it adds is everyone's heard about the fentanyl issues. Fentanyl is a real big problem. It is hitting every community. It's certainly hitting our community, and it's one of the most deadly things to come into a community and for a very, very long time. Well, under California law, fentanyl is not considered a hard drug.
Wow.
Because the law hasn't changed. The law hasn't kept up with fentanyl.
There was no fentanyl back when they picked that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So where methamphetamine and all of those are, which means there are a lot of sentencing enhancements that apply to hard drugs, but fentanyl is not a hard drug. So this act changes that. It classifies fentanyl as a hard drug, so all the sentencing enhancements, all the additional things that you can do with other hard drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine, and those apply. As same with this drug possession as it will be changed. It can wrap fentanyl into that.
Mm.
The next thing that it does is that it mandates on a statewide, across the state, to have what's called a drug. I'm not actually sure what they're going to title it, but it's basically an admonition that is given at the time that a person is convicted of selling drugs, transporting drugs. So it's best understood by an example, is if a person is caught, let's say, selling methamphetamine. They're in court. They plead guilty. Maybe it's their first time. They're going to get probation or 16 months in jail, whatever it may be. And then they go on their merry way. Well, that person's going to get out, and they're probably going to sell drugs again, right?
Yeah.
That's what we think.
Pretty sure.
It's probably going to happen. So this change in the law says, okay, when that person's in jail and they're pleading in that first case for selling of drugs, they're going to sign and be read an admonition that says, hey, and this is totally summarizing it. This is paraphrasing.
So it doesn't start with hey?
It doesn't start with hey.
Okay.
Selling drugs, hard drugs, fentanyl, cocaine, all of those things are dangerous to people. It can cause death. If you continue to do this and someone dies, you can be charged with murder.
Oh. But couldn't. Oh.
So that,
but they couldn't anyway?
So, no. So we can anyway, but this
is
admonition
like the
really helps in that process.
Sure.
Because
I
now
get
that person, they've been convicted, they've been told that these can cause death, and they get out and they keep selling and someone dies, we can charge murder. Second-degree murder against them. Now, you're right. We currently can do that. Here's the problem. We have to prove that knowledge piece they know it can cause death.
Because you can't verify that they're smart enough to actually have figured that out.
And most of these people are going to say,
sad.
Well, I know now because the person died, but I didn't know before. And that is like a really, that's their defense. They come in, and unless you can prove that they themselves know somebody who's overdosed and died by that.
Which just takes time.
All the things.
And yeah. so many loopholes to fly through. That's kind of a fun idea. You know, it's weird. It kind of reminds me of all the drug commercials we see on TV, right? And you think, don't people, can cause death? You're thinking, really? That's a great idea. Well,
yeah.
So they sign it, it's in their record, and then if they're involved in that again, you pull out the paper and you go, over.
You knew. Here's the knowledge piece right here. We can charge you.
That's a great idea.
It's great.
You couldn't do that now? Well, who's going to sign it? Their defense attorney's going to say, don't sign that. You're an
idiot.
So
a lot of counties have started doing that, and here in Shasta County, we actually have started doing that. We put it on our complaint, so when they get the charges, it's written on there. But it's not universal. So a lot of people, their prior could have been in San Francisco that doesn't do it. And then they come up here and the person dies in Shasta County.
That.
So you have to have it. We have to have this universal. We have to have everything universal across the state. These additions to fentanyl, making it a hard drug, getting this advisement, all of those, that's all in this proposition, or what will be a proposition as well, that's coming in November.
Nice. So
it's got a lot of good things.
Yeah, I didn't know fentanyl wasn't considered a hard drug. That just seems crazy.
Well, just think of the next thing that is developed and comes out. Well, it's after the law was already written, so it's not included.
Yeah, you got to wait for it to go through the system.
Until the law changes. So, yeah, there's been a... That one has been one of the most devastating ones to our communities that we've seen in real time. The other one, I can just mention it real quick. There's a lot more. I mean, there's so many changes in the law. I could probably talk this entire 2 hours on all the different things. But I just wanted to highlight these top three. The other was Prop 57 in 2016. The biggest thing it did is... So, by now you realize we've gone through AB 109 and Prop 47. We've really whittled down who's actually in state prison. You know, we've got up there, you know, some pretty significant
bad
criminals that are there. Well, Prop 57 basically said, okay, if you're in state prison and you have served at least the base term, which I'll explain in a minute, of your sentence, you can apply for early release. It created a whole bunch of new credits in an early release program. So if we take a person who, let's say, goes because they have beat up like five different people. They've like really just, you know, taken crowbars to them or whatever. So it's felony level, great bodily injury, but five different people. So they're convicted of five counts of that. Very violent crime. a base term is basically one count, so one victim. Let's say they get 8 years for that. This is the way the sentencing law works. Wow. But they've got the four other charges that they're guilty of, too, and they're sentenced on. But they only get what's called one-third the midterm. So it adds on, say, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years. So
it's like VA math.
Yeah, so their total sentence, let's say, is just 15 years, just grabbing a number. Prop 57 says, okay, after they serve their first term, that eight years, they're now eligible to be released. And they can.
So the other two people that they beat half to death, like, well, you know.
And we are seeing people that have gotten 20-year sentences getting out after 3, 4, 5 years.
That's how that's happening, because we hear about that. Yeah. But the regular people out here are going, what, have we lost our minds?
It's Prop 57.
Will this apply to people that are already in jail? Will they get, like, time served and get released?
Prop 57?
Mm-hmm.
It's people who are currently in prison.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And that's already on the books. We get those petitions.
When did we do that?
All the time. 2016.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. We did that in 2016. When did we do Prop 47?
2014.
2014. Yeah. And when did we legalize marijuana? This is like a quiz show. so far, you're 2 for 2. I don't remember. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, but I did hear the year at one point.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's not
have that,
because that has fed into this whole thing too. That's okay. Right, it's not material. But we did all of this. So legalizing marijuana. I don't know. The year I heard seemed like such a long time ago. I forget.
It's been a while.
I'll look it up. I'll look it up. Hey, I'm sitting here with a computer. I could actually look that up. And
it was Proposition 64, but I didn't write down the date.
Okay. Yeah, hold on here. I should.
It's been within the last 5 years.
I think it's 2017.
Yeah, it's.
Was it 2017?
It's within the last 5 years.
Oh, here we go. 2016, California Voter Initiative. Okay, so it was all around that same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that.
It's like the perfect storm.
It's like that 5 year period. I mean, we've had it.
Because that's what I was thinking, was it was all right in that same time frame. Thank you, Christina.
But that's not to say we haven't had a ton more since then. We have. Because, like I said, there's things that have changed. The law of homicide, the law of sentencing, the sex registration, everything has changed. Every year we get new stuff.
I'm just hitting
the top three big ones right now.
And is that, and is the huge, I mean, we're like decriminalizing crime.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
That's the trend. That has been the trend.
Every year has been something that has watered down the criminal justice system. It's made it harder. That has taken rights away from victims, that have taken, you know, when I first started doing felony crimes, gosh, 18 years ago, I'd say, and I sent someone to prison for 50 years, I could calculate the math when I talked to that victim and said that the penal code says they get 50% credits or they get 15% credits, do the math for them, tell them this person's going to get out in 2020 or whatever it may be. I could give them a date, an approximate time, and feel a lot of confidence in that. This just eroded all of that. And all of it's been retroactive, too. So those people we told 20 years ago...
That your horrible person is going to be off the book for a certain amount of time. Now, all of a sudden, surprise, they're back in your neighborhood stalking you again.
Yeah, they're getting called saying, oh, they filed a Prop 57 petition that everyone passed into law in 2016, and now they can get out 30 years early.
And every time you hear it's a proposition thing, that went to the ballot, and that was passed by the voters.
Voted on by the people. So it's been disheartening the way this state has gone. So you got to caution our voters in California and voters across the nation. You've got to educate yourself on these, because when they title it as Safe Schools Act, probably think that it's probably a lot more in there than.
And then
what's
you have all the people who think, well, I'll just go vote no on all of them. But that's a super bad plan because no means yes in a lot of cases.
Because we've got some that we need you to vote yes on also. Yeah.
Correct. Like, but a lot of times no means yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And so you got to be careful of no means yes. So then you have people who say, well, I'm not going to vote at all. Yeah. Well, then you basically passed it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't.
Yep.
Yeah, because you. It's just.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need everybody to kind of get back on the.
Is there anything in the works to counter the Prop 57 right now? Or?
We have to take a really quick break before we do that. But then we're doing that, and so I found a theme song for all of this for California. I did. I found a theme song. So hit it, Christina.
I can't get these memories out of my mind. And some kind of madness has started to evolve. I tried so hard to let you go, but some kind of madness is swallowing me whole. Yeah.
I crept in the rocks in the hot sun. I fought the law and the
breaking rocks in the hot sun. Yep, we're going to go back to that.
Yeah.
We're going to move from madness to breaking rocks in the hot sun. Who would have thought a song from the 1960s would say this, huh? Seems
yeah.
weird. That was seemed like a lawless era, but, well, in retrospect, no. Yeah. All right, so I'm sorry. You had a question right before we left.
I forgot what it was. You broke my train of thought. Oh, Prop 57. Was yeah. there anything in the works to kind of counter that, or are we still rolling with it?
Not right now. We're just really trying to hit Prop 47.
Right, yeah. right. Which should make a huge difference. I mean, Oregon, you know, I think they're now realizing that their
yeah.
master plan with the drugs and everything was a huge failure. And
yeah.
trying to
yeah, legalize all
that.
The drugs. What could go wrong?
Like, yeah, what can go wrong?
Idiots.
Yeah. Didn't take long.
No, no. The wheels came off pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully they make that course correction.
Yeah.
So on crime, on like major crimes and things like that, you were going to give us a little bit of rundown. I know every county is different in every state, depends on where you are, what your all how your laws are structured. But just as a snapshot for people with the volume.
Yeah.
Of what's coming through your office. So you're not just like sitting around waiting for somebody to commit a crime so you guys can all go to work, right?
No, we've got more work than we can handle.
Yeah.
So in my office, I have 28. There's 28 total prosecutors. That includes myself. And then, you know, we went over kind of the structure of other people, but 28 prosecutors. We get referred to our office any given year anywhere between 9,000 to 12,000 cases for
wow.
review
Yikes.
Any year. Because we're getting them from everything from fish and game to sheriff's office, CHP. We can get them from Department of Justice, FBI, alcohol, ABC, all the different agencies that you can think of that we're going to get cases from. So every year we get a ton of cases. I had talked earlier about that process of when they come into our office and we make a filing decision, whether we're going to file the case or whether we're going to send it out for further investigation. But in any given year, we're probably going to file close to, I would say, 80% of those cases in that given year. Some are just declined because there's just not enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. A lot get sent back out, like waiting for drug results, further investigation, whatever it may be, so it could kick to the next year. But those are new cases every year that these, you know, 28
And they don't
attorneys.
All get resolved like on TV in the same yeah. episode, right?
So that's the point, too, is that you got to realize that last year we filed around 8,000 or 9,000 cases in the year before that. And there's only so many prosecutors, only so many defense attorneys and judges. So the caseloads are very, very, very big. And then you put on top of that stuff like Prop 57. So everyone who's in prison who's filing a Prop 57 petition, those all come to my office.
Oh.
And we didn't get additional funding for that. That is an unfunded state mandate. They come to us, and then we've got 30 days to respond, reach out to the victim, read the case and file a response trying to petition to get them to not be released. That was added onto us. The same thing has happened for homicide cases. We got petitions back under Prop 47. It's just all the different changes in the law. We get different requests from someone who's in state prison. We call that post-conviction work. So where we used to be done at the time of sentencing for most purposes, now a vast majority of those things come back to our office after sentencing for us to continue to fight to keep them in jail. So not only are we getting...
You got to prosecute it, put them away.
And then fight and to keep them there.
And then keep them in, keep them in, keep them in, keep them in.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Who's got time for that?
Like you changed the change in the law on sex registration. All of those people who are sex offenders who have been registering, they're filing petitions and we're having to respond to all of those.
What
too.
Are they filing a petition about?
To change their registration status. So
can you just do that because you want it to be
the law changed. The law changed in, I believe it was 2021. I'd have to dig it out of my notes here.
More bad decisions?
Yeah, in the last like 3 or 4 years. And it changed it to make a more of a tiered system where it used to be if you were a sex offender, it's a lifetime registration. It's not that way anymore. Now, some crimes are registrable for 10 years. Some are registrable for 20 years. Some are registrable for life. So if you've
I did not know that.
If you've been registering for life and now your crime fits something that you say should be on the 10-year or should be the 20-year, you're filing those motions, and those motions are all coming to our office. So every year, there's some change in the law that is adding additional work onto what we do that's outside of just what we get from our law
enforcement. And that's not optional.
It's not optional.
You can't
I guess it's optional. We could not do it, but we're not going to do that. I mean,
yeah, you can't ignore it.
We're going to respond because we want to keep these people sex offenders. We want to keep people in prison.
So what if you didn't respond, just out of curiosity? Then is it like automatic you're out?
That'll be granted, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for Prop 57, if we didn't respond it still goes to the board at the prison to make that determination. Maybe they would grant more than they do now. I don't know. We're not weighing in.
Doesn't really serve the victims.
It doesn't, and we're not going to experiment with that. We're going to do it.
I was just curious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same too with the sex offenders. If you don't weigh in on that, you haven't helped the victims at all on that either.
Right. So we want to continue to help them as much as we can. So, we can talk about caseloads in terms of just case in, case out that we get, but there's so many
other
things.
There's way more to it.
Right. So many other things. And we're also involved in, officer-involved shootings. We're out, our investigators, attorneys are out there on those. All those different types of things, or if there's a local sting that's happening by one of our agencies. Maybe it's a prostitution sting or something like that. Frequently, we have attorneys out there working on those too, or staying up that night working to help advise on any legal issues. Our attorneys do, we cover search warrants 24/7. Like every day, all day, we've got an attorney who's available to our agencies to review search warrants, sign search warrants, and give advice on search warrants. I mean, we have so many different areas.
Well, on TV, they just go right to the judge's house at night and catch him in his bathrobe and get him to sign it. Okay, so in real life?
So in real life, that used to kind of be the case. Because they would come to the prosecutor's house while, we're in our pajamas in the middle of the night. We'd sign it, and then it would go to the judge's house. Now, we use like DocuSign and stuff like that. So
it still has to have a judge's signature?
Yeah, everyone.
But it goes to you first.
It comes to us. We're woken up in the middle of the night to read it, review it, help revise it. Then a judge is woken up, and the agency's working all night long. So
I didn't know you were involved in it. Actually,
yeah, we're involved in every one of those.
So that makes total sense.
So we've got an attorney that's on call, 1 week at a time. It's like, this is your week. Okay, now that's your week, and you can.
You're on search warrant babysitting
search
duty.
Search warrant duty, so middle of the night, multiple calls. Our attorneys are out when there's homicides. They respond out to the scene on weekends for those. We're very involved in our family violence unit when it comes to crimes against children. So we're responding to the Children's Legacy Center when the forensic interviews are being done, which sometimes are nights and after hours or during the daytime. For a child who was just determined that they had just been abused. So our attorneys, they're doing a lot more than what one might think that the DA's office is doing.
Right.
We've got a lot of, and then those attorneys and investigators and advocates, they're also out going to schools, going to community organizations to educate.
Doing all the
as
public
well.
Service type stuff.
Yeah.
Trying to reduce the load.
Can you explain what's the difference? You know, you hear, oh, it's a class one felony or a class two felony.
That's other states.
That's a felony is a felony in California.
California, we just have felonies.
Have felonies.
Yeah. And we
now,
have very few
if
of them,
somebody
so.
Is convicted of a felony, do they go to prison? Or is that all kind of hashed out?
If it's an AB 109 offense, they can't. They can only go to our local jail. If it's something that falls outside of AB 109, then and it's a felony, they can go to prison. They can still, or they could get probation and just do some time here locally. Mm-hmm. There's the whole gambit of options are available.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we don't necessarily fill our jails up with felons just because we have all these felony charges out there. A lot of these folks are still out. As an agreement with their plea, so they
For sure, we definitely have felony cases where a person is on felony probation,
right?
And they're being overseen by our local probation department.
Okay,
yeah,
all right,
yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting change in the criminal justice system.
Sure.
So if you got to be, you know, in charge of the whole thing. Right.
Oh, I'd make many changes.
Yeah. So I didn't leave you with 1 minute because we have like 6-5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were, you know, queen for a day, and you were like, all right, in order of magical things I would do to help the public, you know, make this all work better.
Yeah.
What would be your
first and foremost is we need more places to put people. We need we don't need to be shutting prisons down.
Right.
We need here locally, we need a bigger local jail. But it's not just the jails. We have to do something with mental health in our community too. And across our state, there needs to be something better in place to deal with the mental health issues because we can't just put them all in prison or jail. People with mental health issues are committing crimes, but a lot of times you get their mental health problems under control and they're not going to be committing crimes.
Yeah, so, if they're in jail, they're just going to get out and commit again if they still have their mental health
and I know
issues.
This isn't a number you can actually, you know, none of us are going to be able to actually come up with the number. But just ballpark from what you see, how much of it is mental health, legit mental health, and how much of it is drug abuse causing mental health?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I wouldn't be able to speculate on that.
But that's a huge crossover.
All of those, all of those are at play.
As we have increased the drug use.
A lot of drug use can spur on and cause mental health issues to occur. Get worse, all
sure.
of that. So for sure.
So if we were able to kind of reel in some of the drug, the rampant green light on the drug use.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead and use drugs, and you're not going to get in trouble. You're not going to get rehabbed. Nothing's going to happen. And then we see, you know, all these weird violent crimes that you're like, the person had to be mental.
Yeah.
Do we track how many of those people are on? Like, I know marijuana, now that it's, quote, legal at the state level. Is any of that factored in or tracked that you know of?
We're certainly not tracking that. It would be good to know.
I know. Your office wouldn't do that. That wouldn't make sense. Yeah. I just wondered if that's a stat that's rolling around out there that people are seeing.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
It would be good to know. But, yeah, first and foremost, we need to make sure whether we have enough state prisons for our population. It's really just a population thing. If the percentage of crime is occurring per population, well, we got to make sure we have enough places for that. And same on the local level, and then also something to do with our mental health. And we have to have enough drug rehabilitative programs too, because that can be more and more difficult. I've heard a lot of places are losing a lot of their programs because they don't have any attendees because of Prop 47.
Oh yeah, why do it if you don't have to?
Right,
yeah.
Right. So
I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm all for criminals going to state prison for sure, but it's not the answer for everybody when you've got mental health issues or you're doing your crime because of a drug addiction. Like, if we can cure those underlying issues and they can be productive part of the community, let's do that instead of have them in prison, because you're just buying time. They'll go do their 4 years and then they'll come out
and do it again.
Do it again.
Well, like we were talking about on the break, Steve, that we spoke with on the Addicted Offender Program. I'll put a link to that on this page. Yeah. Because if you're not aware of that program or it doesn't operate in your county, that's a really useful thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, in and out of prison for 40 years, selling drugs and stuff, and said, you know, I'm gonna try getting off drugs and then go to school and fix my life. And you think, wow, okay, it could happen at any time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So not having those programs available, huge problem. Not having jail as a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't work with kids and dogs, right? If there's no consequence.
There's no consequence.
You're going to have bad kids, bad dogs.
Right. Why we think it's different with like adults and crime, I just don't know. But it's been a horrible experiment that we're all impacted by in our communities. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And needs to end.
So, needs to end now, so for sure.
All right, so hopefully the repeal of Prop 47 goes on the ballot, and we'll make sure and make that really public. Maybe after that gets on there and all that stuff, we'll do another program and we'll just talk about just that. Like, what will that do, and why do you care? And help people, because we all get asked, right?
Yeah.
Well, how are you voting on such and such? Yeah. And then if somebody says, well, what about blah, and you don't know, you go, oh, geez, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So give people a way to defend it.
Definitely give people a way to talk about it, defend it, to spread the word. All of that's important.
Well, we really appreciate it because the district attorney, I think, is often maligned and very much misunderstood for how much power you have and how much control you have over everything, and there just isn't that much of it. We've been talking with Stephanie Bridget, who is our district attorney in Shasta County. First woman district attorney here in 8,000 years. Oh, no, wait, it's not that long.
100
and something years. That reminds me of 8,000. What the heck? There's no penalty for lying, right? And we will chat with her again on a different day. You are listening to We the People. The archive will be up this afternoon at wethepeopleradio.us. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.